What is up, podheads? Back with another episode of the Podio Slave Podcast. Joined by Anthony, but there are more people here tonight, Twan. We got some friends in the house. We got Nate back. We got Greg back. How you guys doing?
Love it.
Doing good.
Yeah, man. We got the call, and it's a fucking rager. We got a keg going. This is awesome.
Nate's making off-color jokes. You know, it's a party.
Blink's party song is in the background. Someone in the background was doing a keg stand. That's Nate.
So, Greg, man, it's been, 70 or so episodes since we had you, which is...
too long.
Insane. How you doing, man?
I've been doing good. Good to see you guys doing really good, too.
And, Greg, I hinted at this, that I had something to declare, but I was going to wait till the episode. And I can say, and Tony and I have talked about this quite a bit recently, who are the all-time Audio Slave guests? But there can only be one GOAT. And the GOAT is you, my friend. It's you.
Oh,
agreed.
Thank you.
I'm not going to say it's not even close, because there's some contenders. Like, there's some LeBrons, there's some Magic Johnsons, but you're the Jordan.
Oh, thanks, guys. I love being on here.
Yeah, man, we love having you. And it got me thinking, like, we have to dig into some numbers. But first, tell us how the Bourbon Brothers are doing. What have you guys been up to? What's going on with music? What's going on with shows?
We're still playing 3-4 times a week. We have a New Year's resolution to release at least a song a month. Nice. So we got one out last month. We got another one set for the 26th to be released. And then I'm mixing another one for next month. We'll see what it is and see how long we can keep this going. I was recording almost all of our shows for like a year or so. So I've got a huge back catalog that I just haven't had time to mix. And we recently hired a booking agent, so it takes a big chunk of workload off my plate. It frees me up to do some more fun things other than booking shows, which isn't all that much fun.
Yeah.
a song a month, that's more than like a typical album cycle. It's ambitious, I feel like.
Well, it's a lot easier because, you know, we're playing jazz standards, so we don't have to really write anything.
There you go.
Although there may be... there may be an original one in there. I have one that is like in this vein too, where it's like a 50s jazz song. So we'll see how it turns out.
Ooh, I'm intrigued by that. That'll be fun. That'll be fun.
Nice, dude. Is your booking agent going to put you on anything outside of Georgia? Or you think you're going to do a little mini tour or anything?
We're looking at a bunch of things right now. We've played private events and like conferences out of state before. Like, we've been to Palm Springs to play a conference. We played down in Miami. We're actually going back to Miami to play the Miami Yacht Club in November, and then a private event to go along with it. So we're looking to do like, I know there's a Sinatra's licensed steakhouse in Miami too, as well as that Maestro's chain that does like, you know, it's a fine dining experience. And then they have acts performing there as well. So I'm going to stick him on that. When we were onboarding, nice. It, we were talking about some other places, like we get casinos, like, yeah. Can we play in Vegas?
Oh,
like,
dude.
Hell yeah.
Can we make this more Rat Packy and like get involved with the mob?
I love it. Yes.
Dude, I would love to see Bourbon Brothers playing the Sphere.
We're in.
So, Tony, you've seen Bourbon Bros in the flesh. Describe the experience.
I did. It was on my birthday. Summer of 21. Yeah. It was a blast, man. It was hot because it was Savannah, Georgia in July, but it was a lot of fun. Yeah, no, if you haven't checked out the Bourbon Brothers and you're in the area, whether it be a private event, Miami, the Georgia area, the Atlanta area, get out and see them, because you'll enjoy your time. I'll say it was a lot of fun. And Elmo's there, so.
Oh, I should have grabbed him out of my bag.
If you don't know who Elmo is, go back and listen to episode 64. He'll all be revealed about Elmo.
You were quick on that number. You've been studying, Tone.
I have, and I probably would have known that one off the top of my head, but I do have numbers and episodes right here. So let's dig into some Greg numbers. You guys cool with that?
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Is anyone... am I the first four?
I think you're the first six.
First six what?
Six time guests.
You are six, no. Can we count Rob? Rob's been on 10 times.
Oh, okay. Oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now Rob is a local friend of ours for 20 years. that is a radio DJ in our area. He's made his way into the podcast world on Podio Slave 10 times now, which is, I was kind of surprised by when counting those down today. But Greg, this is number 7 for you.
7?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Wow.
Yeah.
Ooh. You know what fooled me? Episode 100, I feel like.
That counts. Oh, I did count that one. Yeah.
It counts.
Yeah. I counted that, and I have a total elapsed time number set, not counting tonight, obviously. We have episode 9, episode 41, episode 64, episode 85, episode 100, and episode 135, and then whatever number this is going to be. So, a lot, which is great. I mean, yeah, it's always been fun to have you back. And we did episode 9 way back. What was this, May of 2020?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been 2020.
Wow.
So that is the one that's been out there the longest. That is the highest on our list of episodes, 206 or 7. That is number 11 all time for us. So Greg, top 11 right there.
Wow.
In terms of spin.
Who knew?
In terms of people listen.
Yeah. And it was one of our bigger YouTube videos. People constantly comment on that YouTube video. So people are still out there, man. They love the Greg.
Who knew?
So what would you think would be our second biggest? I'll give you the topics. We have He's on Fire, which was the 3-album run we did on episode 41. We have Wheel of Touring, which is episode 64, and that's where you get the Elmo story, which if you haven't heard that, you have to go back and listen to it. Episode 85 was Shredgication, where you gave us some guitar. You gave kind of an impromptu guitar lesson, which was a lot of fun. And then 100 was Comfort Food Albums, and then 135 was MFZB. 19 years, but now it's 20. Is it 20 now? Man. Yeah, it's 20 and some change.
I'm old.
Us too. So what do you think is number 2?
I was much more than 20 when we made that record.
Dang. Yeah,
that's crazy.
What do I think's the
second one? Most, yeah.
Second most listened to. Yeah.
Which one was the first one? You said...
He's on Fire, episode 41. He's on Fire?
I'm going to guess MFCB.
That one is our third biggest.
Third.
Yeah. And that one I think will end up creeping up into second and maybe even first over time, just because people love that record and love. And it just hasn't been out as long as our second biggest, which was He's on Fire, episode 41.
Tour stories then?
Tour stories. Tour stories is number 4. Yep.
4. Oh my
God. Yep. So yeah, you're in the top 37 episodes. 4 of your episodes are in our top 37 episodes. So. Crazy stuff, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of spins and millions of spins with Greg. So if you haven't checked out any of our conversations with Greg, you should go back and do it. We've had a blast talking with him and you, Greg, for, geez, almost 4 years now, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Greg, you have like 3 episodes that are more spins than Scott Ian of Anthrax.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Ooh, you surpassed.
You put asses in the seats, my friend.
Dude, Anthrax is going to open for Bourbon Brothers.
There you go.
How's that possible?
It is, man. Yeah, it is. It's awesome. It's we really appreciate you taking that chance on us way back on episode 9, because it definitely, I agree with Anthony. That prepping for that, I was like, this is really fucking cool. And if we can do more of this, I can't wait. Like, it was so much fun.
That was rad, yeah. It was true. It was proof of concept, as we like to say.
Proof of value. Hey, it's probably why Scott Russo of Unwritten Law said yes.
Yeah.
And then once you say you have Greg and Scott on, then all bets are off, you know?
So almost 7 hours, 6 hours, 44 minutes and 51 seconds of content back there. And then whatever this ends up being, an hour, hour and 5 hour and 10. So almost 8 hours of content with Greg as of now,
you've wasted a lot of your life chatting with us.
Yeah. So thank you, Greg. That's really, that was from us to you. Thank you.
Oh, well, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great episode, guys. Wow. All right.
That was it. Yeah, we're done.
Good night.
No, we're going to do an old staple. We did this way back on episode 31, track one, side one, best album openers. And I wanted to ask you, Greg, because you've been on the other side of it. We, as music fans or nerds, love to like look through and figure out album sequence and, you know, maybe remove, you know, put some stuff in different spots that we think should have been where the last song was, or this is a better album opener, that type of stuff. What goes into it from the musician side of things? Do you write a song thinking this is going to be an album opener?
I don't know if we ever wrote a song with that in mind, like to be an album opener, but a lot of times, because I was looking back at some of the Zebrahead stuff to look at our opening track too, and I was like, oh man, this one's banger. Oh yeah, this one, we kicked this one off fucking good too. And it was like, I think that was always our mindset though. It's like we wanted a high energy track to be an opener, especially I think once we hit our groove and like we held all the cards and like there wasn't the big brother of Columbia like looking over your shoulder saying the track listing, no, you guys need to have it this way. Where it's like, what? No, but it's, we want it. We have this vision. No, you don't.
To hell with your vision, right?
We have the money, so you're going to do our vision. Yeah. We're like, all right.
That tends to be the case where the first track is, if it's a heavy band, it's just in your face, or like a punk band, it's a drum fill that just takes off, you know what I mean? Just right off the bat. And I know one of my picks for tonight is in that world for sure.
Yeah. I had a really difficult time with this, like coming up with it. I was like, oh yeah, this should be awesome. First song bangers, like kicking off records. And then I start pulling up like my favorite bands and thinking about the records. And like, I first go to Van Halen and I quickly realize all my favorite Van Halen songs are, they kick off side two of a record. You flip the tape and it's like Hot for Teacher's the first song on side two of 1984. Unchained is the first song on the flip side of side two of Fair Warning. Like the songs that I dug the most were like side two kicked it off. Or it had like, but you know, Before Jump, it has that little interlude piece where it's just like, I mean, it's got its own track listing. It's a song. It's got a title. Like, it's not really the first song.
It doesn't count. I struggled with that. I don't think that counts as the first song.
I don't know.
No, I think the interlude counts as the first song.
Oh, you do? See, I do. Yes. And yeah. I'm gonna throw a third track at you guys in a little bit.
Okay. Oh, a third track?
Yeah, it's not even the second track.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I think you'll understand when I explain it. Yeah. Well, hey, we make the rules. So
we make the rules. If you don't like it, turn off your station.
I can relate, Greg, with the ease that you thought you were getting into, like a piece of cake, opening tracks. Obviously, this is going to be a no-brainer. But the more you get into it, is why like this nerdery stuff becomes such homework. It's like, that's not worthy, though. And you really start to like go deep, like rabbit hole style on like what is worthy for this episode. Like, what is really the best opening track for this reason or that, you know? So it can't just be your favorite songs, because if it's not in the proper order, first of all, but secondly, like there might be a band that you haven't thought of in a decade that's like, well, dude, that opening track is sick, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I was just putting things on my notepad, and I guess I can't really show you how far it scrolls because it's on my phone.
I love it.
I pulled it up right now. I have 17 songs on this list where I'm like,
ooh, nice.
Yeah, that's way more than three. I'm like, yeah. How do I break this down? Do I break it down into eras? Is it by decade? Do I go genres? Do I go rarity score? Like it's the Immaculate Grid. Where do I go with here?
Hey, we picked the right person for this segment then.
We did. So I immediately remembered that I had done this for episode 31. I think I have two whole pages in this notebook full of so I didn't have to do much prep, which was nice. And then I pulled one that I hadn't even thought of. But yeah, there's so many. You're just like, I could do this all night. I could just parse through. I want to make a long playlist of a bunch of them and just maybe people will listen to it, because album openers are great. And if they're ones for albums that you love and it kicks the album off perfectly, you're all in, right? I mean, that's really the point of it all, is it's fun to revisit the stuff.
Dude, so I have this something that you said, Greg, just reminded me of. Have you guys seen the movie The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent with Nicolas Cage?
I heard of it.
No. Oh, dude, so I just saw it like literally like a week ago. And the guy asked Nick Cage, who's like, he's Nicolas Cage, but he's also Nicolas Cage in the movie. It's like an interesting like parody. But he asked him like, what's your favorite movies of all time? And like, he just went on the rant that you went on, like, well, it depends, because there's so many different styles and genres and eras. You know what I mean? So in true geek style, we're all on the same page.
Nicky Cage super awesome. Fan, Greg Bergdorf.
And Nate. All right. Who wants to lead us off? I think we let Greg lead us off. I mean, he's painstakingly put together this list. We're going to hear what he's got.
All right. Hold on. So I was listening back to episode 31 to make sure I didn't pick anything that you guys already picked. And one of the things I thought was weird is like, you guys can't put actual songs in the podcast because you get a takedown from Spotify, right? True. I was like, oh, shit, there's like a, you got to get clearance, I guess, to put it in there. So hearing you guys like kind of mouth songs.
Oh my God.
Yes.
That's a whole bit kind of our.
We can't play guitar, man. We can't play guitar like you.
Like... All right. My first pick is going to go The Edge. Big guitar intro, classic album from the 80s. Got to be their biggest record, right? Joshua Tree, U2, Where the Streets Have No Name.
Oh, great choice.
Great song. So Tony will probably have edited this out, but Greg tried to play it for us, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
So it was, we were reliving the Shredjication episode all over again.
Yeah, I wonder why it mutes that. It's weird because we heard you kind of strum, and then as soon as you start to play, it's like, nah, sorry, we're not picking that up anymore. I had that on my original list for episode 31 and just didn't pick it. So wow. I'm right there with you. So, so good. I love that that song and that record. And it's probably the one that put them most on the map, right? I mean, they obviously were a band before that. And Nate, what was the name that you came up with them? You had a funny name for them in our Stop the Tone episode.
Oh, for you too?
Yeah, the alternate
one of the name. Oh, what the hell was it? I'll splice it in here because it was hysterical.
All right, here's a good one. Before the iconic Irish band became U2, which two names were they? A, The Hype. B, The Young Dubliners. C, Flogging Harry. And D, Feedback.
Well, it's not Flogging Harry.
Dumb.
But yeah, great song.
Yeah, it's got the long intro, kind of it's got everything you want in that song. Like, it's such a cool guitar riff. It's fairly easy. It's more complicated just because of the style and the technique that he uses playing with the delay pedal. It's definitely probably the most upbeat song on that record too.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
It's definitely the album that made them go from like, not that like New Year's Day or was the Martin Luther King song?
Sunday Bloody Sunday.
Sunday Bloody Sunday. Like, those are big songs, but like this one made them like household name.
Yeah, universal, right? More people were like, ooh, I'm into that.
Well, this song's proof that you don't have to come out swinging from the first note. You can do the build up. Because this builds up for at least a minute, right?
Yeah, it's got a long intro. I went back to watch the video because I remember, you know, growing up in Southern California, I remember it being on the radio where they were saying, you know, U2 is going to play from a rooftop, like they're recreating the Beatles record or last concert. And some of my friends ditched school to go out there to go try and get in and or watch it from the streets. And it was a huge thing, like shutting it down. And watching the playback on it, on the actual video, is you don't necessarily get that on MTV. It's like 4 minutes of buildup before the song kicks in on the full video.
Iconic, man. Iconic guitar tone, iconic song. Everything about that is a banger album opener. And I mean, just banger song, period. But yeah, great fucking call.
I think that's four thumbs up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a full stop song. I think the only time U2 has been able to like replicate that kind of energy on a song, and it's definitely not an opening track, is City of Blinding Lights has a similar vibe to it in terms of slow buildup and then just like a kind of a flawless song through and through. But dude, great pick.
Who's up next?
You. I think you go.
All right, so I get two ready and I'm going to have you guys pick. Do you want the side project that is better than the original artist, anything the original artist has ever done? Or do you want the punk song that was made massive by a video game?
Oh man. I mean, the first thing you said is an episode in itself, I feel like, so definitely keep that on in mind.
Right.
That's a whole other topic for a show.
Band. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, side projects that were better than the original band.
Yeah. And this is a hot tip. I'll lead with that one.
Okay, sweet.
This came out in 2000. Side project that's better than any of the... It's the vocalists. And it's a band that you guys... Greg, you probably like too, but these guys geek out for him. It's this guy's best vocal performance. And this song in the album is just has a haunting vibe that just draws you in.
Is it who...
I've stopped. I'm like really thinking here.
2000 is Perfect Circle.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Tone. Wow. The Hollow.
I'm talking about The Hollow.
Great fucking song. Mm. Yeah.
Album opener to Murder Noms when the drums kick in. There you go, Greg. I'm imitating. But this, honestly, I do think Murder Noms is better than anything Tool's put out.
That's that, for you, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, are you a Tool guy, Greg? Are you a Maynard guy?
I like them. I'm not like over the moon in love with them the way a lot of people love that band. And same with both Perfect Circle. I think for me, like, I think they're great. Maynard's vocals are always amazing. Yeah. But I think for me to like, I dig it, but it's not like in my wheelhouse, because it's not the guitar player that shines in that band.
Yeah.
It's the drum and bass that are the stars in that band. Like, if I were a bass player, I'd be like, oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah. Yep, that makes sense.
same for a drummer. Like, it's just a, I think, a who you gravitate to sort of thing.
Well, and in A Perfect Circle, I would say the person, the instrument that shines, especially on that first record, is Maynard's voice. Like, it's so good. Three Libras is another amazing song. Orestes is another amazing song on that record. So, yeah, I'm with you. Great album opener. And I've got to go back through I found my iPod recently, and I know I have some live stuff from that band around that time that I can't find anywhere else. So I'm hoping I still have it there that I'm excited to now listen to again because you brought it up. So, yeah, hell yeah. Stamp of approval from Tone.
Nice.
That's such an interesting context from Greg, because the drummer is Josh Fries, right? He was like your neighbor growing up in the Vandals, and he's a full-on punk drummer, but he was the drummer for that band, which is completely different out of his realm if he's coming from the punk world type atmosphere.
Yeah, he's so good, though. It's ridiculous.
He's so good.
That's true, yeah.
He's playing with Foos now, isn't he?
Yep. He is, yep. Yeah, we had an all-time Josh Fries story on this show with Scott Russo.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. You played a fill on... Was it Up All Night?
Up All Night. The first
the intro.
Yeah. On the first take, right?
They couldn't find their drummer, and they called him in to do this song, and he just like dropped this gnarly fill at the beginning of the song, which you can still hear today. And they were like, everybody was just like, holy fucking shit, how did you pull that off? And he just did the song and bounced. That was the end of it.
Well, I remember when this album dropped, like that cycle, Judith was the first single, which had like an edge to it. And so then, but then when you get the album, The Hollow is a little different. It's a little more melodic. It's haunting, a little more haunting.
Totally. Yeah.
And if you I listened to the whole album because that was part of this exercise. It's like, I love it as an opener, but was it the best choice as the opener for the album? And I think it was. I think this is a perfect kind of encapsulation that, I don't know, just draws you in. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Perfect.
Perfect Circle. Perfect song.
That's also a perfect song, yes. Nate, you or me?
Go for it, dude.
All right. I'll save the third track curveball for you guys till the end here, but we'll start with one that you wouldn't think that maybe I would pick, but I think we're all going to agree is a great pop rock song from this person's debut album in 2001. The song came out in the summer of 2001. They were on Maverick, which is what Madonna's imprint that Deftones were on, and a few other bands that we love. It hit number 12 on the Hot 100 on the American Pie 2 soundtrack. Female singer-songwriter.
Michelle Branch everywhere.
Yes, sir.
Ooh, boom. Awesome.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. She was on Maverick?
Yeah, that record was on Maverick. The first two, I think, were on. And the records, too, the country band, I think, were also on it. Yeah.
That country record is actually really good. I have that one too.
I really like that. I'm with you, man. No, she's underrated. I don't think people will give her flowers.
Let me ask you this, Stone. Why do you think they put that as the first song?
Oh, this is music industry 2001 all day. It's the best song on the record. Well, maybe second best if you like. Was it All You Wanted? That one's really good too.
Oh, true. Yep.
Yeah, but this is the lead single, and it's out there. People are buying the CD, throwing it in their car, and they're excited about it. So that's why, right?
Well, I think in the streaming era, that makes sense. You put the banger to start, and then they just listen to the whole thing. But in the CD era, they already bought the album, you know?
It's a good point. It's a good point. I still think they thought that way.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. Yeah. I think you're right.
Because it's like, oh, the car starts. Let's put it on track one, see what's in there. Oh, well, it's Everywhere by Michelle Branch, and you're just cranking that because it's Summer of 01, and you just got your license.
You know what? I love this song, but I kind of feel bad. I feel like a lot of people confused her with Vanessa Carlton in that era.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. What was that? 1,000 Miles is her big one?
1,000.
Yeah, the piano.
Yeah.
I didn't know this was the opening track of the record, but I'm thinking of, like, I'm playing it in my head right now, and I remember that it's like a acoustic riff to open it, right? And then it goes into like almost like a drum machine. Is that accurate?
Yeah. And it's a meme now on TikTok. Like, I've seen a bunch of, like, you know, you get those short videos where there's like writing and somebody's like, oh, look, I have this inside out jacket or this reversible jacket, and it's just the opening line, turn it inside out so I can see, and then it's over. Like, that's what TikTok is nowadays for kids. So I saw that recently and I was like, shit, that's actually kind of ingenious. And that happens with a lot of songs, but it made me laugh. And this song's great. So I was like, okay, maybe I'll go listen to Michelle Branch.
2001. Crazy.
And you're right, Greg, that the record is awesome. Leave the Pieces. I've said that on this podcast more than once in 200 plus episodes. I actually really dig that. And we don't talk about that stuff a ton, but I mean, every now and then you got to give it some shine.
Yeah, I still listen. I've listened to that record more than I listen to her record.
Great song. Good choice. Thumbs up. Universal thumbs up. Greg, what do you think?
Universal.
Yeah, thumbs up.
Yep. Universal thumbs up.
All right, Dave, what do you got?
All right, I'm going to switch things up a little bit. This was a verified choice when my son started singing it along with me. I'm like, all right, did you like this one? Yeah, I think this one. I think this is worthy. Because I went down a massive rabbit hole today in different styles and genres of music and kind of going by things that, like, I haven't heard in a while. It's hard to remember what the opening track of any record is, really. This one came to mind just randomly and happens to be the opening track. It's Get Down by Nas on the 2002 record, Godson. Fucking sick. I don't know. You guys obviously know this one. I know we're all Nas fans here, but it's got a James Brown sample in there. And I don't know, I really studied this segment deeply because I really, like, tried to get in the moment and, like, why is this a great opening track? Well, the beat, the rhymes, everything about this song is perfect, but what is the atmosphere that the song is bringing to the table? And I felt like it just puts you in, like, this, like, smoky jazz club. And for a hip-hop artist to bring you into that kind of environment is so unique and so, like, left of center that I'm like, this is, like, quintessential opening track for that reason, because you're just entered into this new atmosphere of, like, this amazing lyricist, and, like, just captures, like, a perfect, I don't know, picture, perfect atmosphere. And my son verified it when he started saying get down, and I was like, yeah, buddy,
that's awesome.
I forgot about this song. I was just on mute playing it, and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember getting this, because this came out after Stillmatic, which, you know, maybe mixed reviews. He comes back with this, and this hits you, and I'm like, all right, he's
just
back.
Those horns,
he's back.
Yeah,
James Brown too, Godfather of Soul, right?
Can't go wrong.
Are you a Nas guy? Are you a hip hop guy, Greg?
I'll leave that with my next pick. It's leading in.
Ooh. All right,
Segway King. Segway King.
All right, the next one. I'm gonna go with this one. My last two picks are gonna be, because they, you know, I was talking earlier, like, do I go with genres? Do I go with rarity? Do I go with, like relevance, like greatness? Like, how do I narrow this list of, you know, 17 down to 3? So my last two are going to be because they were influential in a sense that they kind of created a new genre, almost. It, no, they definitely did. So going from one hip hop album to the other. This one starts out with, "You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge."
Street knowledge, yeah.
Straight out of Compton.
Yes.
Crazy motherfucking nice. Name, Ice Cube. From a gang. Can't really say that part.
Yeah, exactly. But great fucking pick, because that is, it's iconic. And you're right, it did kind of start the whole gangster rap era, right? I mean, that's how we ended up with the West Coast, all of that stuff. Was NWA and
Death Row Records, all yeah, of it. Yeah, that's all Dre, Ice Cube, like it all, I think it all starts here.
What a power move to put this first. It doesn't belong anywhere else. Like the leadoff track. It's like Chuck Knobloch, the leadoff batter. Like there's no other place for that motherfucker. He's the leadoff guy.
Still short arm and throws to first base or
All right. But in all fairness, he's the first person that bad example, but you get my point.
Yeah. I'm with you. It is
another place for him. At the eighth or ninth spot in the lineup.
Perfect. Yeah, second leadoff.
But yeah, there's no other place for this. This sets the tone for the album. Man, great pick. It's why I invited you for this, Greg.
You know, I feel bad. I just did a drive by on Chuck Knobloch. I'm sorry, Chuck. Wherever you are, if you're listening.
Chuck Blockhead, wasn't that his nickname? Chuck
Blockhead. He was a good player.
Wait, worst fielding second baseman who couldn't throw to first base, Chuck Knobloch or Steve Sachs?
It's tough. Yeah, it might be. I don't know, man. Because I think Knobloch just got the yips, right? I mean, that's really what it was. He could actually throw, but he had trouble with it for a stretch. Now we're off on a tangent.
Sachs, same thing. Like growing up in Southern California, watching him as a Dodger, it was like, man, did he really just throw that ball into the stands from second base? Like,
yeah. Poor dude.
I'm going to take us on another tangent. Roger Clemens Baseball for Nintendo, the regular Nintendo, they didn't purchase the rights to the names except for Clemens. So every player was like a weird spin. So Steve Sachs, what do you think his name was in that game?
Scott Sachs.
Steve sucks.
S clarinet.
Wow.
I swear to God.
Oh man.
That's Don Mattingly was D Donningly or something.
That's better than Steve sucks.
So if you had Chuck Knobloch, Steve Sachs on your bingo card tonight, you won. You already won. Yeah.
Oh man. Well, great pick. That song, Greg, you're right. It sets a tone for a whole genre of music that we're gonna get. And actually, Twan, I'm gonna jump in front of you because my song is from this genre.
Wow.
That's cool. Are you cool with me jumping in front of you?
You can, but I'll just say all time video too for Straight Outta Compton.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great video.
Back when the visuals meant something.
All right. 1993 the record came out. The song came out in January of 1994. It's the second single off of this, I think, debut record from this artist. Hit number 8 on the Billboard charts. He and another rapper from this time frame era, Death Row World, just put a drink venture together.
It's going to be Snoop, I mean.
It is, yep.
But what was the opening track off? Well, off Doggy Style?
It's the third track on the record, but like it's really the first track on the record.
Gin and Juice? I mean,
Gin and Juice.
Gin and Juice.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, nice.
Wow. Let me explain why I picked this as a track.
Allow me to introduce myself.
The first song is just talking. The intro, whatever. The second song, Snoop has like a line on. That's it. And it's somebody else rapping into somebody taking a piss in a bathroom, which is the start of Gin and Juice. So it was like, the record doesn't really kick. Yeah. The record doesn't really kick off until Gin and Juice. And if you bought that, you're probably just starting on track 3 anyway, no matter what. So Gin and Juice, track 1, side 1, but it's track 3. All-time album opener.
All-time beat. My God.
Oh,
untouchable beat. No comments on this one? Come on, guys.
Oh, no, jump in. Dude. Hey, what do you got?
It's Dre on the beat, right? Dre produced that, right?
Yeah, dude, breaking the rules a little bit, but no, with the context, I think you're right. I think it is a proper opening track. But yeah, like you said, beat, Anthony, fucking dope. Gin and Juice is I want to say it's his biggest song, right? If not,
it's up there. Yeah, it's, number
it's
eight.
In the top five.
Yeah, and yes, it was produced by Dre.
It was okay. But anytime I think of Snoop, that's the first song that comes to mind. So I didn't think of it as a first track, as an opening track, but another song that really captures that era very much so production wise. That was just everything that song encapsulates is that song in production style.
It's right. It's like it fits perfectly at home in the middle of the G-Funk era, right? I mean, it's exactly what it is.
I'm pretty sure this video was my introduction to hydraulics in cars. I was like, what the fuck is that? People actually,
a car can do that?
A car can do that?
With my mind on my money and my money on my mind. I mean, everybody knows that line. It's iconic. So I know I'm bending the rules, but again, like we said in the intro here, we make them. So I'm going with this song, even though it's the third track.
And the thing is that album had tracks, but that's a perfect place for it.
I think I looked at that record too and was like, oh, it's not the first song. I better, stay away from that one.
You've been disqualified by Greg.
So looking back at my notes, this record came to my mind because of the Gin and Juice venture that Snoop Dogg and Dre have got going right now. I was like, I wonder what number song that was. And I looked back at my notes and I had it written down. I was like, it must have been track one. And then I looked at the album and I was like, fuck, it's track three. And then I listened to one and two. I'm like, no, it's really the first track on the album. Like, kind of. So, yeah, that's how we ended up here. But, you know, I love shit like that. And it's fun to state your case, right?
I mean,
I feel like growing up, I just felt like those, like the interludes and stuff were just like fillers. But you know, there's a science to all those.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's like some genius that's like, this is a palate cleanse, or this is, it'll get them in the right headspace. And then they drop Gin and Juice on your ass.
Well, and there's an all-time interlude interstitial thing on this record, the G's and Hustlers one, going into G's and Hustlers. What do you want to be, Snoop? I want to be a motherfucking hustler. You better ask somebody. It's so good. It's like a 5-year-old.
And that's like a record. 7-year-old like suburban nerd at the time. I'm like, yep. I don't know what's going on, but I'm in.
Yep. Thanks, Mom, for buying me gangster rap.
Watching it on UMTV Raps.
Hell yeah. All right. We're through the G-Funk era. Twan, what do you got, man? You had another interesting one for us.
I do. I got one that has, I think, an all-time drum kind of fill to start the song. Came out in 97. It was probably my introduction to this genre, either this band or another band. It was made very popular by an all-time video game and was a touring mate of Greg's back in the day. And I looked, this band still tours with Zebrahead to this day.
Goldfinger Superman?
Goldfinger Superman.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Nice, dude.
So the drum fill to start the song, it has one of my favorite snare tones of all time, but I think the trained ear would disagree with me. Like it kind of feels a little flat, but to me it's so iconic. Cause I just remember playing the first level with that warehouse in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. And always like the first song that came on. And I'm like, what are those upstrokes? Ska? Is this that Less Than Jake shit? You know, like I'm in.
It was easy to be excited about that at that time too. Like, I think you've tweeted at one point, like, oh, got home from middle school and fired up Tony Hawk and Superman comes out and you're just, it doesn't get any better.
It was peak life. My life peaked in that moment.
Nah.
That was peak civilization.
Yeah, that's more accurate. 97, I'm in on that.
So Greg, you toured with Goldfinger back in the day. You probably witnessed this song live a bunch. The crowd must have loved it. Do you remember it?
Yeah, this is always, they play this towards the end. And whenever we toured with them, we were always out with Real Big Fish too. So they would have the horn brass section from Real Big Fish come out and play the song with them. They didn't have a horn section. They didn't tour with a horn section. So they would bring in the RBF guys to play that song with them. But yeah, it was always a good time.
Such a banger. The horns, like the gang vocal sing-alongs, just hit you. I'm trying to sleep. I lost count of sheep. Like, it's the most simple line, but it has stuck with me for 25 years. And it's the first, I actually had to double check it. I was like, I think it's the first track off Hang Ups. So I went back and I'm like, yes, it was. And I mean, when they made that album, I'm sure they didn't realize how big that song would get. But I wonder if they still would have put it at track one. But it hooked me via Tony Hawk. But then Hang Ups is a great album.
And there's a lot of good songs on that record. Mm-hmm. And then Feldman goes on to be arguably the biggest producer in that genre too.
Absolutely. Yep. He's had his hands in a bunch of stuff.
I was just playing that on mute over here. And it just brought me back.
Play it on the episode, Nate. Come on, man.
We don't want to get shut down. Oh, right.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Good old copyright infringement. But yeah, it just brought me back to, it's from 98, right? That album dropped in 98. Is that what you said, Juan?
97, 98. Yeah. And then Tony Hawk was 99. So
I'm just thinking about how many hours I logged in on that video game.
Oh, dude, so many.
So good. Although if you go back and play it, it's a little sluggish.
Mm.
Yeah.
It would glitch sometime. I remember it. Especially when you get to a giant 720 spin or something at the top of their ramp in the warehouse.
Yeah, Tony Hawk can do it in real life, but video games couldn't handle it at that time.
So, Nate, you ride for this song?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why I was saying it just brought me back, because I remember that era was so, we're all old, right? We're talking about it before we all jumped on. We're so fucking old now, but things were so simple then, and that music, you can hear the simplicity of that time capsule being shit was cheap. Buy a Mountain Dew for 90 cents. Gas was a dollar. Fucking, you could buy a CD for $10. You know what I mean? You can hear it in the sound, or maybe it's just my memories surrounding songs like this. Life was fucking good because there was really no stress. I mean, the 90s, I think, was the best decade economy-wise in the United States for a very long time. And obviously, considering what we're going through right now, it's holy shit, we had it made, So different episode, different segment, but this is a feel-good song and just a feel-good era.
25-cent Surge.
Yeah.
You get a can of Surge for a quarter.
Surge. They still have that in Europe, by the way. A buddy of mine was in Germany a couple summers ago and sent us a photo of Surge. It does still exist.
Nice.
I think they brought Jolt Cola back too, didn't they?
I think you might be right. Yeah, yeah.
You remember a few years ago, they basically, I think anyway, conspiracy theory, they rebranded Surge as Vault. Remember Vault?
I do. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Surge is such a better name.
I thought you were going to say Four Loko. Oh,
I mean, that's probably that Sparks? With alcohol, right?
Sparks, anyway.
Four Loko. Oh, man. My buddy calls that scary juice.
I never had the original recipe.
It's probably why you're still alive.
Better the that KFC way. Original recipe.
Dude, if the guys at Surge are guys and gals at Surge are smart, they would make a hard Surge and call it Surge Hard.
Yes. Yes. Nate, it's almost like you're in the beverage industry.
Was formerly. I have since moved on, I think.
Oh, we got some catching up to do.
Yeah.
So four thumbs up.
Four thumbs up.
100%. 100%.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Who's up? Is it Nate?
Oh, is it me?
Yeah,
oh.
Man.
All right, I got a bunch. I don't have 17, but I have a lot, Greg. Let's see. I'm going to go this one, which is actually your era. Not to say you're an old fogey, but...
That's exactly what you meant.
Yeah. We're all buddies. That's why you're our favorite guest. I can say that and not feel bad. But, yeah, another one where I was just kind of going... what's that meme It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where I have the fucking piece of paper and the arrows.
Charlie Day. Yeah.
Going to different things. Oh, no, this one. No, it's actually this one. No, this one. This is the reason this one's the best one. And that's what I was doing earlier with my son until he verified and sang along. And it's okay, no, you're right. This is the one. So from the 80s, got to pull an 80s pick. Another song that I picked, unbeknownst to my son on the whole, him singing along, was the fact that I really... for whatever reason, focused on where it brings me on an atmospheric standpoint. And this one was oh, dude, it draws you in. It's AC/DC, Hell's Bells.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. Off of Back in...
It's on my list.
Back in Black. Oh, really? Nice, yes. Man. We're on the same level.
Confirmed.
Yeah, just that doom, boom. Yeah, we're making the sound effects.
Yep.
That bell, you know, it's just it's iconic. And for an opening track, just it really draws you in. In terms of vibe, it's a funeral vibe. Everything's it gets your full attention, that's for sure. But I just really like it, and the build up and everything about it. I've been huge AC/DC fan for a while, and I saw them live in LA fucking before the pandemic. It's been a while. But I remember when this song, when they started going
was
into
Malcolm
the song.
Was Malcolm still alive then?
Yep, that? Yep. This was at Dodger Stadium in like 2016, I think. And when they ripped into the song, I was like, fuck yeah. Because it's like a perfect song. It wasn't their opening song to the, I don't think it was the opening song to the show, but if it was, it was perfect. But I remember just thinking like, this is a just an epic song. So when I found, when I did the research and saw that this was the opening track, I was like, god damn, perfect. 10 out of 10.
Yeah. This was their first record after Bon Scott died too, right?
Yeah.
With
around
first
that time.
New record with Brian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, classic record, classic song.
Guitar riff, vibe, sets the tone for the album.
Right.
It's a great track.
Yeah, it's one of those records too, to me, that's like every song is a perfect song, where it's like the whole mm-hmm. record top to bottom just kicks ass.
They've swung back to underrated, obviously, because they've been around so long. And I mean, we're probably the last group of people still talking about them on a podcast. but like, they're still so fucking good.
The drummer went to jail or something. Didn't he do something crazy?
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, hold on. My daughter just walked in at a perfect time for the perfect segue. Come here, sweetheart. Come here, sweetheart. Oh, come on. What did you just get over here?
Don't embarrass me, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. All right, show him your shirt.
Nirvana. Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
There you go.
All right, my last pick. It's another genre creation. This might also work for some people. I don't know if I would say so, but where the side projects may be better than the original band, but it smells like Teen Spirit. Never mind.
Oh, untouchable.
That's also another record to me that's like every track, top to bottom. This is a perfect rock record. Like, unbelievable.
So we talked about this on 199 with Rob and Spose, right? It was a perfect song, but it wasn't one that we picked, but I had brought up Eminem and said how I felt like My Name Is changed kind of my life as a music fan. And Rob was like, that was Smells Like Teen Spirit for me. I remember thinking,
that's right,
all of that 80s hair metal stuff was no longer cool. This was the thing now.
It completely changed.
Changed everything. Yeah. Great pick. Great fucking intro to a genre. You're right. That's a great call. It's not even just an album. It's an intro to a genre.
One of the most iconic, just strumming at the beginning of a song. Most iconic. You know, the drums and obviously that scroll. Man.
Have you seen, I never saw the full interview, but I saw a reel and it was Grohl talking to Pharrell. And Pharrell was like, oh man, you know, I love your drum playing. You're one of the best drummers in the world. He's like, dude, don't say that. He's like, dude, I rip everybody off. I rip off Cameo for like, you know, or was it the Gap Band? But he's like, bop, 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 bop. He's like, that's the beginning. It smells like Teen Spirit. And like Pharrell's mind is like, whoa, wait, what? Hold on. Let me think about that. Holy crap, it is.
It's amazing. It, you're right, though. It's one of those things that you take from your influences. You're gonna pull what you listened to as a kid and try to twist it enough to make it yours. But also, I mean, there's only so many notes, right?
So it was only a 5-piece drum kit. Wow, what else are you going to hit?
Started a genre, man. That's another great pick.
Yeah. I loved that record and that band when they came out. And I think by the time In Utero had gone full album cycle, I was in that mindset of like, kind of over this band that I love so much. Like, I don't want to listen to this record anymore.
Well, it did come and go pretty quick, didn't it?
Right. And then they put out the Unplugged record, and I was all in again, where I was like, oh my god, all these songs reinterpreted like this are so good. And then they had a couple of new extra ones and some covers. I was like, oh, I do love this band. This band is so amazing.
That you're right, that the Unplugged is as iconic of an Unplugged as there is out there. Like, it's we lost him too soon and lost out on what they were gonna do going forward.
Conspiracy theories. Are any of you guys in the belief that that first whole record is just a whole bunch of Kurt Cobain songs that she stole?
Ooh.
I've thought about that actually before, because it's so similar.
there, right? I'm convinced half of that record are his songs, then she just didn't tell anybody.
Yeah. Well, didn't Billy Corgan help out a little bit too with her? Was it on that one or was it later on?
I think Corgan did later on. I think she did some writing with the cat from the Lemonheads too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, they're both musicians. I'm sure they talked music and came up with ideas for each other.
I don't think he came up for her, like wrote songs for her. I think he had songs for the next Nirvana record. Mm. And she
jacked him.
Could have been, man. Could have been.
I would see that. Possibly put money on that. I mean, it wasn't a shared file, right? It was just
allegedly
like a demo tape.
Allegedly. Just to keep Courtney Love from suing us. Yeah. But yeah, you never know. I mean, that certainly could have happened. No way to prove it, right?
Man, great pick. I would say this song and Hell's Bells, there's no other place on those albums where they belong. Like, they have to go first. Just because with Hell's Bells, with the big build up, it just, can you imagine that in the middle of the album, it just wouldn't work. And then with Smells Like Teen Spirit, this sets the tone for the album. Man.
Right. And that's another one. Like, Tony, you were talking, like, from that era, the first single, a lot of times was track one. And I never gave that much thought until you said that just, you know, half an hour ago. I was like, oh, dang. Maybe they did happen a lot.
Yeah, it probably happened more than we realized. And doing these exercises is like, oh, that's a thing that I didn't think about. And then you see it happen on 9 different records and you're like, okay, yeah, this is on purpose.
There's a science to all of it.
Yeah, something that we didn't think about until we started doing this a little more frequently.
Right, absolutely not. Yeah. And like you kind of think about, I mean, we talk about like the science of music with Spotify and the algorithm and all that shit, how it's going to be 30 seconds and all that stuff, but when I was 8 listening to these albums, hell no.
No, no. Well, I wasn't thinking about that at all. Yeah. All right, Twan, you don't have any more?
No, I brought those two. I want to hear what you get, Tom.
Yeah, or Nate, do you have one too? Because I got one more.
I got a bunch. Yep.
No, okay. Yeah. I'm going to quick hitter this bad boy because it's a good one. And it's kind of the peak hair metal with a little more of an edge and an all-time shredder on guitar. Late 80s. First song on their first album.
Guns N' Roses.
Yep.
I had this one on my list too.
Yeah. Welcome to the motherfucking jungle.
It's a cheat code. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Actually, Greg, I thought you were going to do this when you started breaking out the guitar. I thought you were going to do this one.
Yeah. It is so good from front to back. The video is iconic, which we didn't mention with Smells Like Teen Spirit. That one, another iconic music video. This is one too. And just seeing Axl with the hair and Slash with the hair and all the moving and shaking, and it was just hair metal, you know, personified, but also with a little bit more of an edge and kind of like, this is how it's supposed to be done, guys. You guys are doing it cool, but here it is. This is, I'm going to give you kind of what Van Halen was giving you 5 years ago.
Yeah. This is Appetite is another record for me. It's a perfect record from top to bottom. Like every song is just like, oh my God, it's a masterpiece. And this is also another band where I was like, at some point along the way, I couldn't listen to it anymore. I had listened to it so many times. I literally, when I was learning how to play guitar, there was a point in my life where I could play every song on the record. I would just hit play on the record or on my cassette tape. I'd play along to it and get to the other end. I'd flip the tape over and play the other half of the record. Like I was just knew every song. I knew every song on this record. And, I was thinking about making this one of my picks too. And it was on my list. And I was almost going to introduce it as an opposite to how Straight Outta Compton and Nevermind were, how both of those kicked off a genre. Appetite, I feel like, almost ended a genre. Like this was the last of the great hair metal records and bands. Like I don't know if I could think of another hair metal record or like arena rock band like this. After that, like this was the last hurrah from this genre.
So we talked about this about Guns N' Roses, I think, on the Band Vantage band name, how Guns N' Roses is an all time band name, and I'm pretty sure I asked the question. I was like, I wasn't old enough to live this in the moment. Greg, you a little older than us. So when this dropped,
junior year in high school when this came out for me.
Oh, perfect. So you're the perfect person to ask this question. When this album came out and like the band came out, were you guys like, what the fuck is this? Was it, because it was hair metal with an edge, Tone. You put it great. Like, was this, did it take the world by storm?
It was, I mean, it was definitely a huge song. And then I think it turned the corner for them when Sweet Child of Mine came out. Cause at that point, now the song's like Sweet Child's like a mega hit, where on the rock radios, they still played the 7.5 minute version with all the, you know, the two solo intersection interludes, right? But even like adult contemporary pop, you know, top 40 stations were playing it like a 3.5 minute edited song, where it took a lot of the solos and all the riffs out and just condensed it down. So like it was everywhere by the time it got to Sweet Child of Mine. And that's when it was just like out of control big.
Is that the dream, Greg? The 7.5 minute version as a guitarist, that version being on the radio and getting your solos to breathe a little bit?
Oh, hell yeah.
Nice.
Well, like, I mean, KNEC would play that. There was still a dividing line in the sand between K-Rock and KNEC at that time. Like, K-Rock was for bands like The Cure and Morrissey and REM, as well as like Pet Shop Boys and like alt rock sort of stuff. It was Depeche Mode, keyboard, synthesizers, you know. And they had, you know, they had guitar bands, but the guitar bands that K-Rock played at that time were, like I said, like The Smiths, REM, Cure. And then KNEC was like rock bands. That's where you went. That's where Metallica would be on, and Guns N' Roses, and like all of the bad hair metal, like Britney Fox and like the stuff you want to forget about, where you're like, ooh, man, why was that popular? But like, KNEC would still play the, you know, the long versions, the full album tracks. But then you'd go to like Kiss FM and they're playing the 3.5 minute version of this Sweet Child of Mine or something.
Lost its soul, man. That's not enough. That song needs to be the whole version.
Right. Yeah. Imagine like cutting down Bohemian Rhapsody to 3 minutes or something, where you're like, what? No, this is not how the song goes.
It's sacrilegious. All right, Nate, close us out, man. Give us the last one.
All right, man. Got a bunch here, but I'm going to...
What one did your son like? Give us the third one.
Yeah, which one? He liked them all.
I love it.
Get Down was his number one. So he's a hip-hop head, which is awesome. I'm going to go this one because this is the song that got me into the band. Let Me Drown off of Super Unknown by Soundgarden. Ooh, it's just that... Yeah, it's just that sludgy riff. It jumps right into it, and it has that crescendo with Cornell just kind of like speaking in his almost like normal voice, and then eventually he's just kind of reaching a few more notes, and then like a few more seconds he's into his range. It's like you get everything Soundgarden represents in like the first 30 seconds of the song, and as an opening track off of what I personally think is their best record, just captures it all. And I remember when I bought this record at a yard sale, and like, I don't know what year it was, on a CD, and I put this in, right? Or I put it in my car, actually. And this just starts of that like sludgy riff. I'm like, all right, I'm in. All I needed was that riff. I'm in, you know? And me, like, Tony and Anthony always talk about it all the time. Like, they'll send me a text like, dude, you'll like this. This is like what you like. You know what I mean? And it's that. So I think that's my flavor, you know? So, Let Me Drown by Soundgarden off of Super Unknown is just a truly a fucking epic opening track.
I was with you the day that you got that CD.
Oh, nice. And Sopo.
At the yard sale?
Later on. We hung out later on, and he was like, look what I got today. And I was like, yes. That's awesome. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was 20 years ago. 25 years ago, probably.
Nice. I have that signed by Cornell, actually. It's a prized piece of memorabilia.
Oh, wow.
Again, this fits in the category of just... right off the bat, it just jumps right in. I just listened to it. I haven't heard the song in years.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, man, it makes you wonder, like, why does any band choose anything? You know, was this written for to be the first song, or they have a pool of songs like, all right, this makes sense. I don't know. Got to find these out.
Yeah, I don't know. But in terms of like that whole why I chose this checklist, this also fits the... where did it bring me atmospherically? And I got transported into like a, I mean, obviously they're from Seattle, but like just some kind of like smoky club, and you're literally walking in almost maybe a few seconds late, and you just hear this riff, and you're like, all right, I'm fucking here, let's go. Fucking 600 people here ready to party up. It seems like a club song, like a club, like they're still kind of small, but you're lucky that you're there kind of thing. And that song, that's what I saw. When I heard the song, I was like, I'm in the scene. I think it captured that Seattle thing that you were talking about earlier, Greg, with Nirvana, but like being there at kind of the jump. Although this record was 94, but that was the heart of it. So
this was their second good record, right? Bad Motorfinger was the one before that.
Yep.
What an incredible voice.
Oh, dude.
Oh, man. I didn't have a Soundgarden on my list here, but I did, and I took it off because I was like, it's too slow. But that Temple of the Dog record is great too. I had that Say Hello to Heaven on there. I was like, it's such a downer though. Like, it's such a good song, but it's such a downer.
Great. I mean, you're right. All-time voice. One of the best, if not the best, rock voices, at least in the last, 30 years, 35 years. And that is their best record, Nate. I agree with you. Just, you know, it's subjective, and other people will tell you they like other stuff, and that's fine, but I'm with you. Super Unknown is the one. There's so many good songs on that record.
I think that's another, like, specific to our age group, too, because it was 96. Or, no, sorry, it was 94. So, like, 94, you got, like, Green Day, Dookie, Soundgarden, Super Unknown. Like, I would say 94 is
Smash,
probably...
Offspring, Smash, yep.
Yeah, and Weezer, Blue Album. 94.
Oh, I almost picked My Name is Jonas on here.
Dude, yeah, you've been speaking our language.
I have it on my list. Yeah.
Great song.
I want to say 94 is probably the year I got into music. That might be part of it too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I would agree with that. Yep. Yeah. Shit. There's so many, and we could do this for another hour, but we can't do it for another hour because I don't want to edit a 3-hour episode. Shit. I save the extra ones you have, Greg. We'll bring you back. We'll do this one again.
Run it back for number 8, right?
Yeah.
Run it back for 8.
Yeah.
I almost picked Check. Was Check?
Yeah, Check was Waste of Mine. Yeah.
Was it the first one on the Yellow record too? Or
you'd know better than us. Those never made it to our area, Greg.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we played Mamakins at that time out on Lansdowne
in Boston.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, is this the one record I do not have a copy of?
I actually think you said you released. Didn't it get sold by a girlfriend or something?
That was one of the colors of MFZB.
Oh, right. Yeah. Episode 135. Go listen.
I don't think I have a copy of it in here. Oh, I got a tape. I got a cassette tape of it.
Ooh, nice. All right.
That's sitting up here.
Dude, you know what's crazy is you guys played the Avalon in Boston, opening for Real Big Fish. This is 2004, before you guys
did
your...
I wanted to go so bad.
Before you guys did your headline tour.
Quite a few times.
And you had it on CD, and I didn't fucking buy it. Yeah. Dude, I knew it was limited. Yeah. Oh, nice, dude.
Zebra had toilet paper and Zebra had tissue paper.
So, Greg, last time we had you on, we had a listener submit a question. They said, hey, if you ever get Greg back on, ask him about this. So are you up for a fan submitted question?
Oh boy. As long as it doesn't get me divorced.
No.
All right, I'll and, quote
and, him. And yes, Check was also the first song on Yellow.
Nice.
Oh, perfect.
I had to put my glasses on to read it.
The question is, if you guys have Greg back, can you please talk to him about his collaboration with Sega and the Sonic song His World?
Oh, interesting.
That's a deep cut, right?
I would say that's a deep cut, but I think it has like quite a few YouTube hits, like in the millions.
So what year would this have been?
It was Matty Air. Early Matty Air,
like Broadcast 4, 5. Yeah.
Yeah, I would have said like towards the end of Broadcast to the World album cycle. Yeah. Yeah, 19 million views on YouTube. On this one, it's got another 4.5 on another page, 2.9 here, another 12 million.
Shit, we need to put that on our YouTube page, guys.
Where's my royalties?
Right? Put it on your YouTube page, Greg.
Yeah, dude. Bourbon Brothers need a Prevost tour bus.
I mean, I gotta pay my mortgage. Filipinos broke these days.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you're Olivia Rodrigo, then things are good. But yeah, you know, our biggest market was always Japan. And I think it was the 20th or 25th anniversary of the video game, and they were putting out a limited edition video game for it, where I think it had like all of the versions of Sonic of years past in like one downloadable game or something. And they asked us to do a rock song of it, and they gave us they gave us the lyrics. I don't remember if they I think they gave us the lyrics in Japanese. I don't remember if we translated them or if somebody at the label was like, oh, we'll translate it for you so that, you know, it makes sense. And even when they gave it to us and then it was like made sense, it still was like
right.
I'm not sure if you know what this is. This does not read right in English.
Yeah, because it's not just the translation, it's the dialect. So it has to be like...
Right. Spot on. Yeah.
And we wanted to keep the original riff. We wanted to keep some semblance of the original, what is it, an 8 MIDI song that it used to play on it. So that's what they did. So I basically just copped the riff out of there. And then we just kind of made our own song around the riff with the lyrics that they gave us.
Wow.
Damn.
I haven't seen the movie, but I'm told that it's in the movie.
Really?
Wow. Man. That's awesome.
Again, where's the royalty call check? Some people. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, where's the royalty checks? I'm going to stream that movie on Netflix or something.
Just have it in a loop in the living room so that Greg gets some royalties.
My check is bigger this month. It's a dollar.
Yeah, that was a fun one to do, because a lot of times we wouldn't get a whole lot of leeway to do stuff. It was fun to do it, and like, there was some guidelines, you know, but at the same time, we pretty much got to do what we want. Just like when they did the, which Godzilla was it? It was the Ferris Bueller Godzilla, I think. It was one of the anniversary editions of Godzilla. And they asked us to like redo the soundtrack, the theme song. And they literally gave us files of all of the original Godzilla sounds from the original Godzilla movies. So like the Godzilla
nice,
and like, you know, Mothra's noises and all these like monster noises and stuff. And it was like the original files. We're like, oh fuck, we're gonna put these in the song. And they're like, yeah, you know, put it like a Godzilla theme song. We want you to do the theme song, we'll make it rock. We're like, oh fuck. And that was a ton of fun too, where it was just like, we put in we took the like some of the orchestral riffs and just made them dirty guitars. And Cameron did both of these, actually. Cameron Webb, a producer. And you know, I was talking to Cameron, and he's like, what do you want it to sound like? I'm like, I want the guitars to sound like it's a fucking army of tanks coming to fucking shoot Godzilla across fucking water. And so he's like, oh fuck, keep going, do another track. It was like dun 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 dun.
He's like, no one's ever asked me that before. Let me see what I can do.
That's amazing.
But that one was a lot of fun too. One that wasn't much fun is we did theme song. It was supposed to be for Stacy Keibler, WWE Lady Wrestler.
Oh, we know.
And we know. Right? And she left WWE right as we got booked to do her song and like to do her, you know, walk in intro music. And so we were like, oh, and the WWE, like, they don't let you write anything. Like, there's a guy that does it, or there's a staff writer or something, and they give you the piece, and like, you don't get any royalty credits or anything. And they're like, here's the song. Record it. You're like, oh, Do we have no?
Can we don't do, change anything.
No. So, it was like, oh, can we? Can we hear it? And we're like, okay. It was like very, it was very restrictive. It was like, it was cool to work with WWE growing up, you know, watching WrestleMania as a kid and stuff. And I still check in from on wrestling from time to time. I see The Rock's going to be in new WrestleMania.
He's back. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But you're asking creatives to not be creative. That's frustrating, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that question came from what? Stephen Lambert. He DM'd us. So thanks for that one, man. And hopefully Greg answered your question. We finally got Greg back. All right, Greg, thanks for coming back. Thanks for doing an old segment that we hadn't done in a long time, but we were all ready and excited to do again. And I'm glad to get your flair and your touch on this episode. So thanks, man.
Oh, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Greg, the GOAT. The GOAT. Certified GOAT.
I need to get more than 11.
I know you got to pass Rob. So we'll have you back before 70 episodes. How about that?
I can't believe it's been 70. I would have guessed maybe 40.
Yeah.
Long but time. It makes sense. Yeah.
Dang,
well, hey, welcome home, Greg.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Patio Slave. We are at Patio Slave on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all of the places that you can find us on social media. Facebook, Patio Slave Podcast, YouTube, Patio Slave Podcast there. Email us at patioslavepodcast@gmail.com. And hey, if you want to become a supporter, click on the link at the bottom of the episode and give us a dollar, give us $5. It keeps the lights on, keeps us going. We really appreciate that stuff. Thank you.